In the film Midsommar, writer-director Ari Aster follows up his cult horror film Hereditary with a film about a literal cult.
Florence Pugh plays a young woman who tags along with her horrible boyfriend Christian and his anthropologist pals as they head into a remote Swedish village. Once there, they witness some bloody midsummer rituals. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Glenn Weldon. We're talking druggy, sun-drenched Scandinavian creepiness on this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour, so don't go away.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the new Netflix podcast, Behind the Scenes of Stranger Things. Filmmaker and Stranger Things fan Dan Taberski pulls back the curtains on how this show gets made, from script to screen. The Duffer brothers, production designers, hairstylists, and cast members share their experiences filming the third season. Behind the Scenes of Stranger Things starts July 11th, with new episode drops every Thursday. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back. You just met NPR Music's Stephen Thompson. Also with us is Mallory Yu, the movie editor for All Things Considered. Hey, Mallory.
Hey there.
Also with us is Aisha Harris of the New York Times. Hey, Aisha.
Hey.
Hey. All right, so let's go around the table here. When I go to you, just let me know if you've seen Ari Aster's previous film, Hereditary, and what you thought of this one. So let's go, Stephen.
Well, I have not seen Hereditary. I have been told all about it by my horror movie-loving daughter, who was crazy about it and wouldn't go with me to see Midsommar because she wants to see it with her friend. and I was intrigued after seeing this movie how fascinating it is that my 15-year-old daughter is dying to see what is essentially a 2-hour and 20-minute art project.
Slow burn.
Slow burn, kind of horror movie, but horror as seen through the eyes of, like, Yorgos Lanthimos.
Yeah.
this very weird and creepy and artful, beautiful, strange. I thought of you, Glenn, the entire time I was watching this. I'm like, this is made for Glenn Weldon.
Well, I mean, there are no jump scares. And right. I didn't go into this movie doing what I always do, which is look everything up on Wikipedia just so I know the entire plot, which I did for Hereditary because I think that was helpful because it got a little confusing there toward the end for me. But I hear what you're saying. It's a gorgeously shot film that builds.
It's a gorgeously shot film that builds. It is slow moving, if that is not necessarily your jam. But at the same time, it seared images in my head in ways that so many movies just don't. This is not a movie I will soon forget. Right. It is full of these images that are just like, I can't shake them.
Absolutely. Aisha, what'd you think?
Well, I have seen Hereditary actually only once and when it first came out last year. And that was a movie that, like Stephen was saying, like really seared images into my head and also just seared Toni Collette's just all-encompassing performance into my brain. Overall, I prefer that movie to this one. This one is definitely a slow build, but then what does it build to? I felt as though I didn't connect with really any of the ideas that were being thrown out there about relationships, about trauma, about men being terrible. Like there were lots of these ideas that were there, but then the climax, I was just kind of like, okay. So I sat here for 2.5 hours, and I also have a thing about movies that are more than 2 hours. Like, you really need to earn those two and a half plus hours.
Yeah.
I don't think it earned all of those moments. But there were a few performances that I liked, especially Florence Pugh. I think she was doing a lot with a character that is not, I think, very well written. There's a very weird sex scene.
Yes.
and to me, without spoiling it too much, there's a very weird sex scene, and it was probably my favorite moment of the entire movie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, it was an actually demented and creepy sex scene in a way that I hadn't really seen before.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, I really liked this movie. I have seen Hereditary, and I think I would say that I liked that one a little bit better just because I felt like it built up to something more than this one. I think I just really like Ari Aster's kind of filmmaking, the way that he sort of layers the horror. There's always that sort of individual emotional horror of the characters, horror that we can identify with, I guess. And then there's the sort of fantastic side of things. I think each aspect heightens the other. Mm-hmm. And I also really like the way Aster uses like physical space and sound to disorient his audiences. Like in Hereditary, it was the sort of creepy dollhouse layout of the house that you know, most of the movie takes place in, and you can never really tell where you were in that house. And I feel like in Midsommar, it's the sort of the way the light illuminates everything and gives nothing away that made me feel even more claustrophobic than if the movie had been dark.
Yes.
I also have to say, but, and I hate that I have to have a but in here, but I really hated Ari Aster's use of disfigurement and disability as a trope. Mm-hmm. I felt like it just wasn't necessary and strengthened sort of that idea that deformity equals monstrosity.
Right.
That's a common horror trope, but I just don't think it was necessary.
Yeah. Because not a lot is done with it. This film, and to a lesser extent Hereditary, is about stuff happening around the edges of the frame because hallucinogens are involved in this plot. There's a lot of that kind of stuff happening that's kind of vibrating. So he's building up. What I respect about him is that he's building up a sense of dread. He's not a jump scare guy. I went into this film thinking I don't like horror, and I now realize that what I don't like is jump scares and slasher films.
Exactly. Right.
Because I saw this at the Alamo out in Virginia, which I recommend people see anything at the Alamo if they can, because there was this brief sort of cinematic essay beforehand about the genre of folk horror, which this falls smack dab in the middle of, which is typified by a person alone or isolated in some way in a kind of very natural wooded location usually. They're going up against a kind of communal fanaticism. Boom. That's where this lands.
Mm-hmm.
So I was reminded, and many people are making the comparison to The Wicker Man, both the original one and the remake, the recent-ish remake with Nicolas Cage. In The Wicker Man, it is about a police officer visiting this remote island and sort of scolding people about the natural world, and he represents repression. He represents, you know, the need to kind of keep sexuality, especially female sexuality, down. So when he gets his comeuppance, 30-year-old spoiler alert, you feel it. You feel like a sense of, like, catharsis. I think that's what Ari Aster was going for at the end of this film, and I thought he nailed it. I thought that last moment, it just felt earned.
You know, props to Jack Rayner for...
Who plays Christian. Her boyfriend.
For being the worst boyfriend. I mean, maybe not the worst boyfriend, but worst in the way that
low-key worst.
Right. Yeah. And it's like a way that... I mean, as a woman that I have experienced personally.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm the only one who felt this way, but I got that. But then I also felt like it was almost him being a bad boyfriend. And also, we should probably talk about Will Poulter's character who plays his friend, Mark. And Will Poulter, if you haven't seen his face, like, he has, like...
the most punchable face.
Most punchable face. That's exactly how I've always described him. He just has these eyebrows that, like, are super devilish. He played one of the bad, like, evil people in the movie Detroit from a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, like, I just felt like it was almost cartoonish. And the audience I saw it with was, like, laughing for a lot of parts. And I couldn't tell if they were... This was a press screening. So I couldn't tell if this was, like... There were plants who were laughing, because sometimes that happens where they're like there to get other people to laugh even though it's not funny, or if they were like nervous laughing, or if they were laughing because, oh, I've been in this situation. Look, I've been in situations too where I'm in a relationship with someone and like I start to apologize to them for something bad that they did to me, which is exactly what happens in this. But it also just felt too on the nose. I don't know. It's and to the point where like I could see like eons away like where the story was going, where it was heading, like even though what happened was not exactly like there was no way to construct
no
what
way
exactly
to
happened.
Exactly what happens.
But like I knew what the feeling was going to be at the end, and to me it kind of took the air out of it for me a little bit.
I think at the same time, I mean, yes, you see some element of where it's going, but at the same time, I felt from pretty early on like I didn't read anything about this movie going in, and I was like, I have absolutely no idea what's about to happen. And as they pull into this, you know, sort of Swedish commune slash compound, I really had absolutely no idea where it was taking me. Even as creepy stuff happens, you don't necessarily get a sense of the depth of what you're going into until it's revealed in a way that I did find mostly worked. I'm not necessarily sure that this movie completely lands everything it's trying to say about, one, grief, and two, the disillusion of a bad relationship. I came away more with images than with like a concrete sense of like a larger artistic statement about those heavy topics that it's clearly coming back to again and again.
Right. Some of the images, again, they're funny. Some of the dialogue here is funny. And I think my way into this film was as a very, very dark comedy because a lot of the on-the-nose stuff that Aisha mentioned, to me, that's just kind of the joke. The fact that when we first meet the Florence Pugh character, her apartment is all IKEA furniture. It's just... That is perfect. That is so perfect. It makes sense for the character, but it also is about the claustrophobia that this film is really experimenting with and really exploring.
She's trying so hard to relate to these men, and they are completely shutting her out, and she has no idea why. And she might have a sense of why. And I'm not saying that, like, men can't relate to Florence Pugh's character, Danny, in this movie, but I think a lot of women especially will recognize the very specific ways and the very specific things that Florence Pugh is doing when she's talking to Christian or Mark or the other characters, these other men, the way that she makes herself really small and trying to be less of an inconvenience to these men is infinitely relatable to
me. And the fact that the boyfriend of the main character is named Christian, and this film is about pagan observations, shall we say, is just so on the nose that it's got to be a gag.
Oh, yeah. I mean, clearly intentional.
You know, the genre of folk horror kind of peaked around the 70s. That's, we've got a lot of these kind of films. It reflects something going on in society at the time, which is a disillusionment with the kind of hippie ideal back to the land. We are one with nature. So why? We've gotten a couple of these recently. We've gotten The Witch, which kind of plays in the same sandbox. Yeah. Suspiria kind of plays in the sandbox too. A return to kind of like satanic themes. Are we starting a new satanic panic? What's going on here, guys?
There are a lot of articles and studies recently that have been saying that a lot of kind of younger people, like the church is losing members and isn't sort of gaining new members, that young people are leaving the church, and there's a lot of kind of angst about that.
I think that you can look to something maybe like Burning Man, where you have all of these people, particularly young people, who take this, I mean, granted, Burning Man has now turned into this, like, very corporate entity, but what it used to be or was supposed to have been about was, like, communing in the deserts in Nevada. Money is not an object. You like, exchange things with each other. It's like a barter system. It's just this whole weird hippie, dippy-ish sort of thing that a lot of young people are attracted to. And we've seen now in recent years that, like, it's become more of a corporate entity. I don't know if that has anything to do with this, but there are plenty of young people I know who look for that sort of community to a point where it can be almost cult-like, and like you only hang out with a certain group of people. Some of them live together in ways that like could be described as like hippie-like or hippie-ish. I don't think it's gone away. I think it's something that's kind of become a thing more in recent years.
Well, and there is something to the idea of an unraveling of imagined utopias.
Right.
And the unraveling of tourists, anthropologists, as they are in this movie, trying to come in and invade, you know, this utopia and experiencing consequences for that. One thing I don't want to get out of this discussion without mentioning William Jackson Harper, a.k.a. TV's Chidi from The Good Place, has a very prominent role in this movie, which, A, I'm delighted to see, and, B, I appreciated that his character is sort of a curdled version of TV's Chidi. Someone who is interested in ethics and anthropology but is not quite so ethical. I just love seeing him in other things, and I definitely felt at one point when the movie was, when it was a little bit slow going, thinking at one point, at least I'm watching Chidi.
Yeah, okay. All right. I like the performance of Jack Rayner as Christian, as the boyfriend, because, again, to play that role, you need to play him as someone who doesn't realize what a D-bag he's being.
Right.
In his head, he's defending every motion, every choice he makes. He's perfectly, perfectly defensible in his own mind. There is no mustache twirling in this movie. That's what I liked about it. I mean, I think we're all in agreement that we definitely want to see what this guy does next.
Yeah.
All right. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow Mallory at Mallory_you and Aisha at CraftingMyStyle. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. And if you have a second and you're so inclined, please subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. And we will see you all on Friday.
The world is complicated. But knowing the past can help us understand it so much better.
That's where we come in. I'm Rund Abdel-Fattah.
I'm Ramtin Arablouei, and we're the hosts of Throughline, NPR's history podcast.
Every week, we'll dig into forgotten stories from the moments that shaped our world.
Throughline from NPR. Listen and subscribe now.